Her name. Hour number three. DDC, you know what that music means. It's time for us to head east. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville. Vinny, how you doing?
Good, guys. Hope you guys and everybody had a great Father's Day.
Yeah. Great day, for sure. What has been the fallout in your market now that we're just over a week out of the Vols being eliminated?
Well, I think maybe a little bit more of a voice of those that, you know, are more rational and looking at it big picture. I think you're hearing from more of those. I'm sure they were in shock at the beginning, but you know, there's still a ton of pride and sense of accomplishment for this year's team. Anyone that throws around the failure term is that's way too strong and just not right, because all of the memories that fans had, the enjoyment of the season, the accomplishments, those can't be taken away. Those still happened. So failure is just way overblown. Disappointment, sure. And as we see, I talk about this with football. Once you elevate the expectations, you're not going back to the original starting point. I know plenty of people have said, well, you're picked to finish fourth in the East, so you got to look at it from that standpoint. And some do, in order to kind of, you know, make sense of it all a little bit and still feel better about it. But for a lot of fans, once you raise the bar to one, that's now your new bar. It happens in football. Even if it's elevated beyond what's realistic, for those people that have done that, then it's hard to meet that bar, and you're going to be disappointed, and hence you're going to get different reactions. So as with a lot of stuff with the fans, it's spread out in different ways. But I do think more and more starting to settle into, hey, you can't take away this incredible season. We're going to be back next year. We, you know, wish that we were there, and this is maybe one of those deals where Tennessee is the best team. They're just not playing for it because of the way the postseason is set up. You know, those kind of thoughts to process it all, but it, you know, that's kind of where it's gone since the end of the season.
Yep, and it looks like Arkansas is on a mission, because they were the one seed last year. They were number one, and they didn't make it to Omaha, and boy, did they absolutely annihilate Stanford. Set was 17-2. I mean, I had it on, and I was like, holy cow. It was just like 5-0, 7-0, 8-0, 10. I mean, it was incredible. And if they go on and they complete the mission, that's where the focus will be in your market. That's where the focus will be with Vols fans. Can they do exactly what Arkansas did, use this as the motivation? It's the Virginia example, right, in college basketball. They were the one seed. They go down to the 16 seed. They get embarrassed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They did what no team has ever done as a one seed, lose to a 16, and then they came back and won it all the following year. So with that being said, what do you expect their roster to look like? Will it be equipped to do that type of storyline, if that becomes the narrative, if Arkansas can win it?
Well, they're going to have a lot of new pieces to next year's team. There's no doubt about it. They lose three guys that are out of eligibility. They're a big part of this team, and Evan Russell, Luke Lipsius, and their closer in Redmond Walsh. Those guys are definitely gone. Their three projected first-rounders are definitely gone, in my opinion, in Drew Gilbert, Jordan Beck, and Blake Tidwell. So at minimum, I think you're losing those six key pieces, and those are six big key pieces. Now the question is who else besides that? Trey Lipscomb, Ben Joyce, these are some of the guys, Cortland Lawson, Seth Stevenson. These are guys that, depending on what prospect list you look at, and there's just like with the polls, there's a bunch of them out there, that some of those guys will show up from time to time. I think there's 616 draft picks in the 20 rounds plus compensatory in this year's draft. it doesn't have to be just a first or second round pick for you to lose them, for those kids to make the decision to move on to Pro Bowl. Others, even if they are taken in that range, you know, 2 through 10 or whatever, some may say, you know what, I still have things I can work on. I can be a first round pick next year. I don't have to start that clock now. I'm going to come back and try to win a championship, get better, and improve my draft stock. So some will make that decision. Others are going to be ready to move on from being a college student and just starting their pro clock. So everybody will look at it differently. It depends on negotiations. I'm sure you guys have talked about it. It depends on where you're drafted, what the money is, all those kind of factors involved. And then we got to see what it can look like. They can lose 8 of their 9 bats in their lineup this year, other than the 2 freshmen that were rotating at DH. So I think they'll get a couple back and they'll lose a couple besides those definite 6. They're going to bring their starting rotation back, other than Blade Tidwell when he would start, and Dolander, Burns, and Beam. Also get a past Friday night starter from Missouri and Seth Alverson, who was injured this year, never able to pitch. He's coming back. They'll definitely add him to the mix. And that's so they could be in a situation with 4 quality weekend starters again, better than pretty much anyone has as that kind of luxury. And by the way, Stevenson and Christian Scott, reserve outfielder, both of them have hinted on social media to, like, let's run it back, why not one more, those kind of things, but there hadn't been any sort of declaration. People have taken that as those guys are coming back, we'll see. And then another key part of this is their signing class. It was the number 22 ranked signing class according to Perfect Game, and may be different in some other rankings, but they've got a couple of typical power, big right-handed arms, and then a couple of outfielders among their top 4 or 5 guys in the signing class. So where do those guys get drafted? Do they give the indication to major league teams, like Chase Burns did last year, hey, I'm going to school, don't bother? And then Burns ended up being a 20th round pick of the Padres when he could have been, you know, first or second round. So how does each kid handle that? Christian Moore, Tennessee thought they were going to lose Christian Moore to the draft. He ended up putting out a number that was a big number he stood by, and teams weren't willing to go there, so he ended up going to college at UT and had a great freshman year. So each guy handles it. How do they get hit by the draft? Last year they weren't devastated, only missed 2, lost 2 of their top, really only 2 guys to the draft. Does that happen again? I think that'll be important because they're probably going to need to lean on this class as well. So a little bit more maybe even than last year. But and then there's the transfer portal. Maui Auna, who was a all Big 12 caliber shortstop at Kansas, he committed a transfer to Tennessee. You had another JUCO outfielder from Walter State, power hitter that looks a lot like Jordan Beck. He's coming in, and they could add others in the transfer portal as well, because this will be a destination spot. So I think their roster will be fine, and they've shown that guys elevating to bigger positions, Darren, and seizing that opportunity and showing what they can do when they finally get their opportunity.
Vince Ferrara is with us. Vince, this is more of a broad question, but what are you hearing on Tennessee and maybe other schools like it that have one of these collectives? How does the NIL work for baseball? I just, you know, with only 11.7 scholarships, it would seem like it would be an attractive thing if you can find some NIL money for guys you want to keep on your roster who maybe you couldn't offer a full scholarship to, but if you could supplement that with some NIL money. Is that something that is happening with this collective? And what are you hearing around the league?
There are definitely guys that are taking advantage of name, image, and likeness, whether they're doing commercials for law firms or they have T-shirt deals with different merchandise stores. There's guys, you know, putting their products out there, you know, on social media. So there's guys definitely taking advantage of it. I don't know exactly how much money they're making. I don't think it's difference making money. I think it could potentially get to the point to where some of those, like Tennessee, can use that to, you know, to help kids in making their decisions, or maybe even offset the fact that right now with 11.7 scholarships, to your point, Willie, that you know, maybe the guy, they have to supplement and try to find some money elsewhere to get a guy on the campus. And but you got to be strategic with that kind of stuff. If you're going to hold back, you know, two-fifths or a quarter of a scholarship for one guy, you better know you can get an NIL deal to more than make that up for him. And then you better use that point 250 scholarship on someone that you know it's going to work out. So it's just ridiculous how they have to divide that pie up so much and work so hard at it. But I don't know that it's nowhere near football or basketball right now. I talked to an Olympic sport athlete just this morning, and she said it was very light on what they were doing, like a couple of social media posts or we'll send you some free gear type of stuff. And there are some Olympic sport athletes that are cutting big deals, but I don't think that in the masses that's been a big thing outside of football and men's basketball, and in some cases women's basketball too, to where that's changing the game in terms of recruiting just yet.
The Vols go on Thursday at Media Days, July 21st. Do you have a couple minutes to talk about recruiting and SEC Media Days on the other side real quick?
Sure. Yep.
All right, more with Smoky Mountain Rain, a.k.a. Vince Ferrara, from the Sports Animal in Knoxville. We'll come back, talk about SEC Media Days and their recruiting class and the 8 or 9 games. Things on the football side next. SEC Media Days, about a month away, down in Atlanta. The Vols will be the final day. It'll be Auburn, Texas A&M, and Tennessee. So Josh Heupel, they're back to bringing three players. Any idea what direction Josh Heupel will go in his second year? And what
is there
players?
A contest? Is there odds in Vegas, FanDuel? Who will be the three players for the Big Orange?
I don't think so. I think it's a little bit easier than honestly at times it has been. I like the fact that they're going back to three. I wasn't sure they may, you know, I thought maybe they'd hide behind the, you know, the COVID excuse and just limit it. But so three guys will get an opportunity. Plus, with name, image, and likeness, it makes more sense for more guys to get more exposure. I think the first two to me are easy. I think it's Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman. Those guys do well with the media. They're the two offensive stars. Those two are to me no brainers. Again, Tennessee has not announced it. This is just my opinion. And then the third one, typically they want someone, at least one person from each side of the ball. So then you go on the defense, but that's where Tennessee has struggled, and they lost some of their veterans and better players. So I think you have to go to the leaders on defense and the most accomplished guys, and I think it's either Jalen McCullough, safety, Trayvon Flowers, safety, one of those two. Probably McCullough, because he's been doing media since he was a freshman. He's good at it. He doesn't mind doing it. And he is a starter. And I think there's some name recognition for him because he's been playing for a while. The other ones, I guess you could go to, Amari Thomas is really good with the media. He'll be a starter on the interior of the D-line. A guy who was pretty good last year playing alongside Matthew Butler. But is he accomplished enough? I think you're expecting a better year from him, but he's not a star per se. And then the other one potentially could be Byron Young. He's expected to have a much better year as a pass rusher off the edge. Last year he came on late with 5.5 sacks, but not necessarily a household name. He does media, but he may not want to do an event like that. I do think that they will let some of those guys say, hey, I want to do it, I don't want to do it. So my guess would be Hooker and Tillman. I would be shocked if it's not those two. And then the one defensive player, I'd probably say Jalen McCullough, safety.
Vince, do you think we're going to get a resolution on a 9-game schedule? I'm sure that will be heavily discussed at the SEC Media Days, but how soon do you think we'll have it figured out?
I would not, honestly, we're only, gosh, less than 4 weeks away, so I would not expect it by then. I think because they didn't have any true determination coming out of media days other than they were doing away with divisions, my guess is they're going to take more time and let this play out a little bit more and not rush to that judgment on it, especially because it was reported to be a 50-50 split in what the schools thought in Destin. So why are you going to rush to try to get people to change their opinions or do a revote, even though they technically didn't vote, but they knew where everybody stood, including Oklahoma and Texas? So it was straight down the middle in Destin. I think you got to do some more work before you either start to lean on the schools or you convince them that it should go one way or the other. I think it's going to take some time. And it's interesting how that divide looks like based on who's on the 8 camp and who's in the 9 camp.
All right. Here's a question for the summer. What is a realistic season for Tennessee? What's ballpark as far as what's expected, and what would be better than expected in your mind right now?
Well, I think realistic is 8 or 9 wins. I think that's second or third in the SEC. You know, whether you look at Tennessee as 3-1 out of conference or 4-0, say if you give them 8 wins, 4-0 in non-conference, it's 4-4 in conference. That might not be good enough, because I do think that I sense more and more, if you talk to fans, that they're on an 8 as a line in terms of wins, that more people would go the over into the 9, and for some that I've already heard into the 10 category. I would not go there, 9 maybe, but look, there's wins and there's losses that you can identify on paper with this season's Tennessee schedule, and then the games you can kind of put in the 50-50 category. Are they all going to go your way? Are they all but one going to go in your way? If you think Tennessee only loses 3 times and wins 9, you're basically saying that of all the 50-50 games, they're going to win all but maybe one of them. That the case? Josh Heupel in Tennessee, they won the games they were supposed to last year, and they lost to some of the better teams on their schedule. There's not a whole lot of, like with Butch, you had the upsets of Florida, Georgia, but then you had the horrible losses to Vandy and South Carolina in some cases. So this team has kind of fallen a little bit more in line. I think the way people view the schedule, the expectations are more on the 9 than the 8. I think the realistic is 8 or 9, and I would put them at 8 right now. The biggest thing for me is the defense. I still need to feel better about that defense. It doesn't need to be Georgia of last year or anything close to that, but it can't be what we saw at Nissan Stadium in Nashville in the bowl game. So where do they fall in line there? Are they at least better in some areas? I think what makes the difference is, do they get better pass rush this year? Can they get off the field on third down? Especially, remember how many times on third and long a quarterback would break their back, whether it's Matt Corral or Byron Young or Brian Young or whoever it might be. Would break their back with a run on third down and move the change. So I think those are two big areas, and what do they do in the secondary? So Bryce Young, I don't know, say Byron, Bryce Young at Alabama. So either any of those things happen, I think they can at least be better on defense, at least to be middle of the pack. They just can't be one of the worst defensive units if they're going to get in that 9 or 10 range, which would put them second in the SEC.
Vince, I was on your show, and we were talking about some hockey issues. I'm curious, just your perspective, when you saw the story about Bill Haslam jumping in on the ownership for the Predators. What came to mind? I don't know if you guys talked about it in your circles at all, but certainly he's got the Knoxville ties. What was the reaction?
Well, it depends on the direction. I think that, like you said, it was a surprise to everybody there in the mid-state. It was certainly a surprise in East Tennessee. I think there was the jokes with Jimmy Haslam, and, you know, is it going to go better than the Cleveland Browns and that kind of stuff? But after that, I think they're all for, when you actually dig into the story, I think they're all for, hey, maybe pump some money into that ownership group and be able to afford to compete and improve the roster so you can stay at a competitive level. And there are plenty of Preds fans in East Tennessee. So it's a little bit of what we heard. It's not like we took call after call on it, but that's a little bit of the feedback. There was an initial shock for sure, like it was for you guys there.
The Haslam family is so prominent in Knoxville. What is the reaction? Because the same thing happened here. I mean, instantly the comments on Thursday evening when it was getting out there was, oh my gosh, please, you know. Basically, everybody views right now what Jimmy Haslam has done in Cleveland not great, especially the latest round with Deshaun Watson. Is that how it's viewed in Knoxville, or how do they view Haslam as an owner of the Browns?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, it's not like we take a ton of calls on that. Usually, it is references are to that effect of, you know, hey, look what, you know, what's happening with the Cleveland Browns. It you know, hasn't gone great. So they're not a regular topic of conversation. I think, though, there is still that status, especially for Bill having been governor. And maybe that's a little bit different. Maybe they do view it a little bit different. It's still so due, kind of, you know, happened on Friday. But the Jimmy Haslam thing with Cleveland certainly is not one where, you know, they're bragging about necessarily for the calls we hear, and social media plays out that way as well. So,
Good stuff. Appreciate it as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great week.
Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, there in Knoxville, WNML. We'll come back, continue the discussion on the other side here on the DDC. ESPN 102.5 The Game, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Pierre LeBrun, speaking about Barry Trotz, of course, we had the news about him and a new home in Davidson County. We talked about that on Friday. It's about the size of my house. I would like to pick up my house and move it to that area because he bought it for $1.5 million. And I would like to do that. That would be a nice retirement plan for me and my family. $1.5 mil for my house. But, and I said it this morning, and I think I said it on Friday, I was under the impression that he always had a house here, and I'd like to know, did he sell his old house and then buy that one, or was there a period where he did not have a residence here? I'd like more clarification on that. Wasn't able to really get anywhere with that over the weekend. I'm going to continue to try to find out how that all played out. But nonetheless, we know he's bought a house here. I guess it's what, in the 12th Avenue area? That's where he bought the house. Is that right? And he brought up possibly the front office. And I just think it's interesting because Joe asked me this morning on Robbie and Rex Road how I felt about that. And there's a couple layers of this for me. One, I think Barry Trotz, we know he has options. He is going to be in the Hall of Fame as a head coach in the National Hockey League. He has a Hall of Fame resume. The wins are there. He's won a Stanley Cup, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. But it's not like he's 72 years old. So he's got tons of options. We know he's already turned down the Flyers. Winnipeg wants his services. Now, it does look like our buddy, Mr. Sunshine, is going to Dallas. Mr.
Peter DeBoer.
Just everything is beautiful. Half glass is half full. Peter DeBoer.
Well, isn't it interesting, too, that Peter DeBoer, how did his season end, or his tenure really end, essentially, as the coach of Vegas. He got beat in that crazy shootout against Dallas, which clinched things for the Predators that same night. So he was undone by the Stars, and now he's turned around and been hired by them. But apparently, it looks like Elliot Friedman put that out yesterday. Like, it looks all things are pointing that way. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think Barry Trotz was ever really honed in on Dallas.
Nope.
But it looks like
Detroit wants him.
Detroit and Winnipeg are the two that are still getting talked about. Now, it must be nice. I mean, you know, you're a pretty sought after guy, and Barry Trotz is within one. And definitely one great season, two seasons of passing Joel Quenneville in wins. That could happen all time.
Yeah.
It's incredible what he's been doing here, racking up great season after great season. Although last year was a huge challenge for him. They had the COVID that just derailed everything. And then some injuries on top of that for the Islanders. And so he's in a position where he's looking for a new job. And Elijah mentioned this on our group text last night. It is true. It's interesting how quickly some of these guys have recycled. DeBoer, Cassidy. I mean, within a week, he's at his next place. It's like musical
Tortorella.
Chairs. Tortorella.
It's annoying. If you get one job as an NHL head coach and you're there for more than 2 years, you will have any job in the NHL you want because someone else is going to take the risk on you that it won't happen the same way it had at your other three stops.
Well, and this is not fair, but there have been teams try to break away from that mold. Like Philadelphia, it didn't work. Who else? I think this is the Rangers, right? Didn't work. So teams have tried.
Yeah, some do.
But it hasn't really worked. And I know that's not fair.
When you take a college guy.
You take
somebody from
the
juniors,
unknown.
Somebody from the AHL. But there are different pathways. But it does really seem right now that the trend is to recycle the guys.
Who did Vancouver hire? They fired their coach in the middle of the season. Who did they hire? Bruce
Boudreau. They brought him back. And so, it must be nice if you're Barry Trotz to be sort of at the top of the list and be able to tell people, hey, I need until July 1st. Because he's forcing those teams to wait. That's still another, here we're sitting there on June 20th. It's still another, better part of 2 weeks before he's going to make his decision. I would have to think that there's got to be a little bit of antsiness on some of these teams' parts. The other thing that could be going on is, and this is again listening to Elliot's podcast, he's talked about this. There are some candidates who are on the staffs of Colorado and Tampa that you can't really talk to until the season is over. So there might be some potential candidates there that could get a head coaching job. For example, Rick Tocchet got the job with the Coyotes after they won the Stanley Cup against the Predators. They had to wait all the way until the end of the season to do that. But let's get back to Barry. So he's apparently talked to Nashville about a job. I do believe, and I said this on Friday before this report came out, I do believe someday he will return to Nashville with the Predators in some role. And I don't think it will be coach. But I think he will end up, and I say end, everything's fluid, right? But I think at some point he will be brought back to this organization. I think he wants that, and I think the organization wants that. Now, what exactly the role is, that's what I'm not sure about. Like, is it assistant GM? Is it the GM? Is it ambassador? Is it special consultant? There's any number of titles you could create for a guy like that. What does Barry want to do? And what is the need of the team? But I think there will be a desire on both parts. Does that make sense to you? But I think he still wants another kick at the can as a coach, and it won't be here that he does it.
I don't know for sure that, because this is the layers that I went through this morning. One, there's probably a portion of Barry Trotz is tired of getting told that he's not good enough to coach when he's a Hall of Fame coach. And hell, he may go down with the most wins ever if it's all said and done. If he gets another crack at it, another kick at the can, and he racks up a lot more successful seasons like he's done basically every year, he may be the winningest when it's all said and done. Or right there, right? Right there at the very, very top. What is he, third right now? Third all time?
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, the way it played out in Washington and now the way it's played out in New York, there may be a part of Barry that's like, you know what, I'm tired of people in the front office saying that, you know, it's not good enough. How'd that turn out in Washington with his replacement? We know how it turned out. And now, and I'm rooting for Lane, but I don't know how this is going to play out with Lane Lambert.
But it's the nature of the business. Barry Trotz was, he lasted here so much longer than most people last. That's just,
yeah, but it's
the way the
but
business
it's ridiculous.
Works.
It's ridiculous. It you go to two conference finals in 4 years and it's not good enough? And you're the Islanders? Get out of here. What are you talking about?
That's why all these other teams
are,
jumping at the chance to try to get him.
I understand.
And bring him.
It doesn't mean that it's right. Doesn't mean it's the right thing. So there's a part of it. If that's the mentality, there's a part of Barry that maybe say, "You guys are out of whack. You're crazy. Like what? What do you think the standard is that you've got to what go to the cup every other year to keep your job or win it every other year to keep your job? Like, give me a break." So that's the picture I'm painting is there may be a part of Barry that's like, I'm just so tired. Maybe I'll go upstairs and I'll tell coaches how to do their job. I'll make the decisions and I'll tell coaches how to do their jobs. I'm a Hall of Famer and yet I'm getting told what to do and I'm not good enough. Like, get out of here with that. Now, Barry isn't like that, but look, he's a human being too. And I'm sure privately he has had those thoughts. But here's the interesting dynamic. If it were to play out here right now, like if it were to actually happen right now, like maybe he just says, you know what, forget coaching, forget it. I've done it. I'm going to get in the Hall of Fame. I've accomplished winning a Stanley Cup as a head coach. I'm good. I've made my money. I'm good. Lou, give me my $5 million. Let's say he goes in this role. The only thing that's going to get weird here is every time the Predators are in a lull, it's going to be people screaming, put Barry Trotz on the bench. Every time it's not working out, anytime something doesn't go right, whether it's the general manager or the head coach, it's going to be replacing with Barry. And I don't know if Barry wants that, and I don't know if the organization wants that, because you know that's how it'll happen.
That's what would happen now.
He is beloved here.
That's what would happen here now.
If it was now.
So I don't think the timing is right here now. That's my gut feeling. And nobody knows that more than Barry, because what happened a lot when Barry was the coach here? There was a lot of, well, you got Terry Crisp right there.
Yeah.
That did happen.
Of course it did.
And they had to build a really good relationship. That was something very sensitive to Terry Crisp. Crispy would go to him and say, look, I want you to be cool with this, because I'm coming in here. If it gets talked about, I don't want you feeling pressure. Because at the time, Barry Trotz was a nobody.
Yep.
Nobody had ever heard of him.
Right. That's right. We'll come back. We'll continue that discussion to wrap up the third hour of the DDC next. Back here on the DDC. All right, let's talk about what we're just getting in here. By the way, we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this hot Monday. Hope everybody's had a great day so far. So we were talking about Barry Trotz, and I kind of feel like he knows the lay of the land in the peg. Winnipeg, that is. And if he wanted to be the Jets' next head coach, I think by now he'd be the Jets' next head
coach. That's my gut feeling. I agree with you on that.
What are you waiting for? Either you want it or you don't. And so I just kind of feel like he doesn't. The question is, does he really want to go to Detroit? Is that really a good option? Quite honestly, I'm a little surprised that he didn't end up with a more established team. Like, Bruce Cassidy went to Vegas. Obviously, Vegas was a pretty attractive job, wouldn't you say? I would say that Boston, I think, is a pretty attractive job.
It's an attractive job, but it might be some retooling.
It may not be, right. It may be aging. But here is something to consider. I've always thought that there's coaches, whenever they build up, they have success in a market or they're beloved in a market, they have a really hard time. The ones that care, they have a hard time going back and coaching against that fan base, that organization, whether it's in the same division. For example, it was interesting to me whenever Urban Meyer would get rumored for other SEC jobs. And I'm like, I don't think so, because especially like Tennessee, it's like he's not going to go. He won national championships at Florida. He's got a certain love affair down there in Gainesville that he doesn't want to ruin, because anytime you go against your rival, that shine is going to – it's going to take some shine away, right? People will not feel the same. Then Urban Meyer's rumored to go to Michigan. It's like, yeah, again, he's not going to ruin what he's got, what he's built up in Columbus, to go to Michigan. So they try to find jobs, you know, in other conferences. They don't. And I just don't think Barry, especially if we're talking about if ultimately he wants to end up here in a front office role, do you really think he's going to go coach in the division against the Predators? Think about it. When he left here, where did he go? Washington and the Islanders. Barely see them, right? The only way you would see them truly, where it would be weird here, is in the Stanley Cup Final.
And we thought it might happen in 2018. We thought that was a real chance.
That's right. So typically they steer away from that. I think, one, if he wanted the Winnipeg job, he would have taken it by now. And two, I don't think Barry's going to coach in the division. I think even if Dallas reached out to him and said, hey, we really, really want you, I don't think he's going to Dallas. I don't think he would do that. I don't think he would take a job inside the Predators division if indeed, and I believe it to be true, he ultimately wants to end up at the end of his career in some capacity with the Predators organization.
I think there's a lot of logic to that, and I'm with you on, if it were Winnipeg, then he would have accepted the job. I'm not sure what he would be waiting on. But here's the other side of the coin. If it's not Winnipeg, other than Detroit, what could it be? And if he just passes on this round,
it may not be coaching.
If he passes on this round, would he come to Nashville? I do think there would have to be some discussions on, look, I'm not coming here to look over John Hines' shoulder. Now, if there's a guy that could build a relationship, I think Barry Trotz could do a very good job of that, trying to put everybody at ease, because he's a very good communicator, right? He is open. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's not Mr. Clandestine at all. I think there would be a good line of communication. How can I help you? Right? But it would just be a natural thing. If he were with the organization at all, he couldn't help.
No.
But there would be this huge wave. As soon as the Predators lost a game, there would be a lot of people going, hey, you got Barry Trotz right there. He's right there.
Put him on the bench.
I mean, it would be unbearable.
You cannot get out from underneath
him. You can't, and that's why, and I think he would understand.
Especially
that.
A place where he's beloved. He's beloved here in this market. And he's earned that. He's earned that right to be beloved.
I don't know how you could do that and it not be a thing, especially when you just re-upped your coach.
Yes. It's impossible.
And I don't know if I want to put John Hines in that situation if I'm David Poile, if he's making that call.
Well, now, let's also know, it's not just John Hines. It's David Poile, too.
Yes, it is.
That is the other part of this. Now, you could say, well, David's the one that, you know, sent him packing. So, but look, have you ever heard Barry Trotz ever come out and say anything bad about David Poile?
No, they have a very good relationship.
Or the organization? No, of course not. Because in the end, Barry has said all the right things, knowing that if it wasn't for David Poile in this organization, he wouldn't be a Hall of Fame head coach in the National Hockey League, because somebody had to give him a chance. And they gave him a chance, and he was here for a long time. So, look, that's another thing. The first time, there's already people, as we know, with this offseason, we've certainly seen enough feedback, whether it's phone calls, whether it's text on this show, that people are out on David Poile. There's a certain portion of the fan base that are ready for a different voice, a different person, different direction. I don't know how you want to phrase it. They just want something different. So those fans and that group, there's no doubt the minute something isn't going right, they're also going to point at Barry sliding over in the GM role. So I don't think there's any way to get out from underneath that. So the question is, does Barry want that, and does the organization want to sign up for that? Because I think both would like to be working together. Both would like for it to happen. I just don't know if both want that cloud over them the whole time.
And this is another question I have, and I have no idea what the answer is. When Pierre LeBrun says he's talked to Nashville, who are the talks with? Is it with David Poile? Is it with Sean Henry? Is it with a member of the ownership group that Barry knows? I don't know what form those talks
took. It wasn't us. Just to put that on the record. Rule us out. We can confirm it
but
was
you,
not
you
us.
You see what I'm saying, though. Like, it was this just sort of a brainstorming, hey, we'd love to have this happen someday. But to get back to the coaching part of this, he's 55 wins away from tying Joel Quenneville for second all-time. Now, Scotty Bowman is number one. He's going to be tough to catch unless Barry Trotz decided to put in another about 10 years, right? Realistically, 8 to 10 years is what it would take to catch Scotty Bowman for all-time. But yeah, number two all-time.
Two is very, very – well, it's not only obtainable. It would happen. It would happen.
Yeah. One great season.
If he takes another job, it's going to happen. He'll be second overall. He's probably not going to get to Bowman.
So I feel like there's one more run in him. But with Philadelphia out of the picture, it looks like it's down to Winnipeg and Detroit. I haven't heard much – just all of the – Pierre LeBrun, Elliott, all the people that are covering the beat here – it doesn't look like Boston is in the cards. But Winnipeg and Detroit are two that there's some heavy rumors there. But it's just something to watch for here. This is something to keep an eye on short-term and long-term. What's next for him?
Yeah, we're getting some input on our text line. Plus, if you remember, there was a question at the end-of-the-year presser that finally happened. Remember, we were all waiting for the end-of-the-year presser from our own Chase McCabe to David Poile about Barry Trotz, and he gave an answer. And what's interesting is we can discuss his answer because we've learned a little bit more since that answer on how this has all played out. Because at the time, what David was saying was true, but as we've just well documented here in this segment, I don't know how much of that is truly in play. We'll do all that to begin the final hour. But first, Willie, you've got a word about QC Kinetics.
I do have a word about QC Kinetics, and they are trying to get people moving again. If you've had some problems with joint pain and they have cramped your style, if you will, you're not able to do the things that you love to do, QC Kinetics wants to help you. They've got some methods that maybe you haven't looked in before. They do not involve surgery. They do not involve downtime. They don't involve drugs. These are all things. So if you've been suffering from joint pain, arthritis, injuries, you know the traditional treatments, look at QC Kinetics because this is a progressive way to go. It's the nation's leader in regenerative medicine. They've got an advanced, exciting, natural alternative that can give you lasting relief. Steroid shots are toxic to your joints. Pain meds are addictive and nobody wants to go under the knife. So take a look at it. Get active again. If you love hiking or playing old man baseball, or pick up basketball, but the joints aren't really behaving for you, take a look at QC Kinetics and get a free consultation in office right here. Call the local medical professionals at QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024. Get moving with QC Kinetics.